Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is Claudia Monticelli with another episode of Multiple Voices. My Multiple Voices podcast, true to its name, includes different series. For example, we have the Voices of Love, where we discuss relationships, the voice of empowerment, the voice of laughter and play, the voice of pleasure, and the magical voice of archetypes and how they change the way we live. But we also have the voice of memory that includes everything from history to discussions of past life regression. There's also writing voices, where we interview both seasoned writers and authors who have just started getting their feet wet with writing, and we learn what can work for you as potential writers. Our series called Voice of the Spirit discusses different forms of spirituality and religion. And then Channeling Voices is a series that covers what happens when you channel, but is also extended to mediumship. Take a moment to review this podcast if you've enjoyed listening, and leave a hearty 5 stars. I'd appreciate it. Enjoy your listening. Here I am for the series Speaking Voices with my guest, Frances Cahill. Frances Cahill is a Brisbane-based author, public speaking coach, and courage companion. When I saw that courage companion, I thought, well, we all need one, don't we? She was a speaker, a very confident, very powerful speaker for quite a while. Then she had, of course, like many of us, a devastating occurrence in her life. She'll talk about that. She has started so many different programs that I'd like her to speak about. And she has an academic background in social linguistics, which is another reason why I gravitated towards her, because I am as well. And she has a long history in theater performance. And so much experience, decades in corporate and government administration. Of course, she's put this to good use and devised practical tools and techniques that I hope she'll share with us. So let's get her on. Frances, come in and say hello.
Hello, Claudia, and hello to your wonderful listeners.
So you are far away. I guess it's 8 hours away from me here in Rome. So that must be what?
It's 6:30. 6:30 in the evening, yes.
Okay, in the evening. Mm. Okay. When do they eat around in your neck of the woods? Woods in dinner?
Well, it depends. Is this dinner time? Yes, it is dinner time. It depends. Probably on your age. I used to wait for dinner because I'd go somewhere else and have it outside. But somewhere else.
Yeah, and have appetizers, happy
That's
hour.
That's right. But now,
in Italy.
Yes.
In Italy, they say people who eat at this age, at this time, mm-hmm. eat with the chickens. All right, so let's get down to brass tacks.
Yes, let's do it.
I was happy to get you into the series, Speaking Voices, because there are, yes, different people who talk about speaking, and many talk about breathing, but specifically you touch on fear. Let's talk about the fear of public speaking.
I'm just sort of thinking back over my clients over the years, and mm-hmm. I've done a sort of a survey, Claudia.
Good for you.
And it's very low key, no high academics here.
Of course.
But the question that I've asked them is, when can you remember that you could speak without fear? And the majority of people say, I think it was in primary school. That's elementary school, I suppose, in the US.
All right.
Primary
yes,
school.
Yes,
you
yes.
know, and it's usually something like in year 4 or year 5, they were delivering an oral presentation about, you know, the geography of Japan or something, and froze.
Right.
And the teacher, Mrs. Adams or Mr. Miller, didn't help.
Yeah.
Just left them there. Oh. And so at that really tender age where speaking in public, it's still something quite new, but that total right. vulnerability, they remember it. They crashed and burned in yes. the oral, you know, yes. presentation, and they yes. remember that. Their body remembers it, and their head remembers it. right through into adulthood, I can't speak in public. And generally it's because they crashed and burned at that time, you know, whether it's 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or 30 years ago.
Well, listen to this. You're reminding me, before we started, I spoke, told you that I teach conference interpreting,
yes.
You know, simultaneous interpreting in the booths mm-hmm. with earphones. There are two modes of interpreting, really. One is in the booths with earphones, and one is outside the booths with a notepad, press conference, and all of that. Now, everyone is so frightened of the one without the booth. Oh my God, they'll see me.
Yes. They'll see me. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So where does it come from? There's, mm-hmm. for me, and I want to state quite clearly from the beginning, Claudia, that I do not, mm-hmm. my lane in terms of coaching people has no place in it, because I'm not qualified, is for people who are at a traumatic level of fear.
Yes.
You know, I'm very clear about that. But if there is someone who is obviously traumatized from it, there is somebody else that they need to see.
Somebody else, right. Sure.
Okay, so that I have to make that quite clear. I'm very concerned that some people take on clients where perhaps more harm than good could be done. Yeah.
Well, trauma is different than fear, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Two different
for
things,
sure. Yeah. It is different, but a lot of people will say, oh, well, you know, just go to Toastmasters.
Sure, sure, sure.
And, you know, the person is not going to go to Toastmasters. So for me, it's really important that what we're talking about, certainly someone who has fear of public speaking, it is interrupting their lives. It's interrupting their capacity to be able to live a full life. And whether that's can I quickly give you an anecdote? One of the young women that I worked with within the last 2 years it was. And mm-hmm. It was a corporate program, and we called it Sweaty Palms. And this
very apropos.
Yes. And she said, you know, Fran, I feel so much more confident in speaking in meetings and all of that stuff. But the best thing is I can go to the pub and confidently order my drink from the bloke behind the bar. And I thought, wow, that really is something, you know, I mean, of course, although you shouldn't be drinking, all that has nothing to do with it. It was her fear of being able to speak was stopping her from going and ordering a drink at the pub. So that
and probably who knows what else.
What else, exactly. And, you know, in mm-hmm. terms of she came to see me in the Sweaty Palms sessions because of problems in meetings where she wanted to say something and uh-huh. she knew she had something to say.
Oh.
But
mm-hmm.
just mm-hmm. by the time she got there, either the topic had moved on or, you know, there's a whole bunch of reasons where it wasn't appropriate anymore because her fear had stopped her from inserting her contribution at the appropriate time.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, then the voice becomes a metaphor for power.
Yes.
Then.
Yes.
In this sense.
It does.
You know?
Absolutely. And while that, and I see that as not power for the sake of it, you know, where you're going to be dominating the meeting or anything like that. But I firmly believe that everybody has, you know, it's an interpersonal thing, but everyone has a unique approach to life, have a unique view about something. There's no one else mm-hmm. in the world that would be able to deliver that particular thing at that particular time. And that to me is awesome.
And that way.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. So that's, did I answer your question? I wandered off a bit there.
Well, where does the, we ended well, off with,
where does
where
the
fear, does
the come,
fear
from?
Come from? We don't know.
No, mm-hmm. In terms of, I'd probably say,
I'm listening.
Yes. Probably 70% of clients that I've had it's been a childhood experience.
Ah, okay.
Isn't
that amazing? I wouldn't expect that. Mm.
I didn't either. I didn't either.
Uh-huh.
That's right. That's where we're going back to your original question, the survey that I did, you know, to make people feel comfortable. And so I think, well, when was the last time you remember being able to speak in public?
Yeah.
And usually it is sometime in primary school, in elementary school.
Yeah.
a very interesting, you might find this a bit of a hoot, a bit funny, but someone came up to tell me an alternate reason why we have this, and this was based on more of the nurture, as opposed to nurture is nature. When in hunter-gatherer times you were faced with a group of strangers in front of you, it probably was going to be death for you. So, you know, the body memory is is carrying. So I thought that was that's pretty good. That's pretty good. But
well, there's a joke that goes around. Everyone's afraid of public speaking, speaking in the public. But, you know, can you imagine speaking at a funeral about a person? That is devastating because of the emotional charge that you're
Of course.
Well, so let's say that people come to you because of their fear, or what would their objective be? Do they come to you say, look, Frances, I need to speak on October 15th, and it's a month before. Can you prepare me? Or do they say something like, I work in company XYZ. Every meeting is like this. By the end of the year, by mid-year when I'm going to be reviewed, I would like to be reviewed positively. Or what are their goals when they come to you?
I've helped two people with eulogies. You know,
eulogies.
Yeah, yeah. Uncle Fred died, or, you know, dad or whatever, and I need you to help me. Okay. Mm-hmm. The plan was, and we talked a lot about, why are you afraid of showing emotion at a eulogy? Why are you afraid of that, when it should be a passionate, emotion-charged, you know, you're talking about this person. So we then make the distinction between being emotional and unable to function, and then being emotional and passionate about your message for the person who has gone, and commemorating their life. And that takes quite a bit of discussion.
So they would typically... Right, it does, I'm sure. So how long would you give to that occasion? How long does it take to turn a person into a little more self-confident?
That usually we have, you know, it's several hours. It's not
God, you know. I thought you were going to say week. I was expecting weeks.
No. If it's
that, you're a magician.
No. For a eulogy.
You're too far away. Francis Brisbane. Sorry, guys, here in Europe or the US.
I'm on Zoom. I can do Zooms.
Good for you. Good to hear that, everybody. She can do Zoom.
In terms of a eulogy, it's in terms of structure of the performance, you still have a script. All of the and look, your broader question was, where do we get to? What's the outcome? And the outcome is providing not just a script, but we're delivering a whole performance. And that performance will be about voice. It will be about posture. Yeah. It will be about, but the major thing, Claudia, is moving someone from a point of vulnerability into courage.
Yeah.
That's the outcome for me.
Yes. All right. Now there's something that I'd like to insert here, because I work with interpreters, and I told them, no matter what, you have the booth, you have, you know, you're outside with a notepad, but believe me when I say that even the most seasoned interpreters, myself included, are nervous until they utter the first few words.
Yes.
Then they just start to relax. Mm. And this, I'm talking about seasoned professionals.
Yes, of course.
And I don't believe, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you're talking about script. The script, preparing a script, is a very minimal part of the fear versus the total performance, I believe.
Absolutely. The words themselves, and I use the term script as words themselves, but also scripting the entire performance, you know, like
a
director says, you know, the stage manager says, so that it's there's two forms of what the word, or two levels of what script actually means.
Exactly. Yeah.
So for me, you rehearse a piece of the script,
the rehearse,
but you also then deliver and you have rehearsals of the entire script. There's, you know, I know the same words, but there's two levels we're talking about.
I know there are two different scripts. I understand that difference. Now we're talking about the eulogy. The eulogy generally could span the space of 5 minutes to 20 minutes. Is that too long?
Yeah, 20 minutes is too long. Too long.
That's too long. Yeah. Okay.
If, well, I suppose it depends on the nature of the funeral. If you're the only one saying anything,
speaking,
probably 15 minutes. But in terms of being able to sustain a level of the distinction between emotion and passion for 15 minutes, I think that would be asking a lot of an untrained speaker.
Look, I've always been delegated the speaker at a eulogy for the eulogy in all of my relatives' deaths. I used to think, oh my God, what's going to happen when my parents die?
Yes.
And I got up, and for my mom's death, died before my father, I got up there. I had, I use a simple word, a tree, mind map, okay? And 5 minutes into that, the priest cut me off. And pointed to his watch. It was the worst experience.
Of course.
My jaw dropped. I was right at the most important part of it.
Yes.
And then, of course, everybody, of course, said the same thing. Mm. He had another function. That was really, could you imagine the person coming to you and happening to them at the eulogy? My God. It's a terrible thing. Right. Never go to that church again.
No, time is money.
Time is money. Okay, now let's talk about, because there is a connection of fear, because it's not only, from Descartes, we know that the mind and body are one thing, but you speak of the connection of fear at that level, the mind-body level.
And this is something that I only learned since the terrifying things the difficulties that I encountered, coming to this point.
Well, give us a brief summary of that.
I was a very confident speaker and I had a reasonably senior position in a government department, and I was very, confident in what I did. I ran conferences, all of that sort of thing. And I ended up with a very devastating divorce. That just sort of happened. And I had two young children or two teenagers, and I needed to move my house or move back to my hometown. Two kids depended upon me and had to start all over again. And I was in my 50s. Mm-hmm. And I found that my confidence was zero. I went for jobs and I was unable to speak. I was terrified.
Isn't that credible?
Incredible. So at that point, I then said, okay, what is it you're frightened of? Because you know that you can speak, Fran. You know that you are articulate. You know all of those things. And for me, it was that's when I started to develop the mind-body connection, is that the mind was saying, I don't want to make a fool of myself. Or my mind was also saying, this is so important. My mind was telling me this is so important. I have to do it well. And I wasn't doing it well. So there was this, constant conflict of what I could and
interests.
Yes, exactly. And then when I went through to get to another interview, I could feel my body responding to the fear. And there
in what way?
It was my heart started pumping. I was starting to shallow breathe. My eyes were flicking, that fear response.
Yeah.
And I said, there is nothing that is dangerous in front of me. Why is this happening? Mm-hmm. And my memory was fueling my body to be responding to this fear, responding to this mind thing. There was nothing in front of me that was fearful other than maybe what an outcome was. So I was being fearful of an outcome that hadn't come yet, fueled by something that happened in the past. And you think, well, that's pretty stupid. Fran, what are you doing? And so then for me, it's saying whatever it is that triggered your fear in the past, that's where it belongs. That's where it belongs. And your current situation, what is the outcome you're looking for? Are you wanting to explain something? And, you know, I try to filter it down into, are you trying to explain something? Is this just an outcome? You just got to get this done. Do you want to have people like you? Do you, you know, so go through a range of what is it you're wanting to achieve by this piece of work?
Right.
What is it? And it's different for, you know, whatever the eulogy is or whatever the meeting is or the presentation. What is it that you want to achieve? Okay, so what are you frightened of? And I never, ever say, Claudia, just get over the fear, because the fear is real.
Ah, no.
You know, the fear is real. The fear is fueling things in your body where you are responding to that threat. You can see your body is saying, there's a threat, here, respond to it. And one of the worst things you can start to do is shallow breathe.
All right, now, wait a minute now. We talk about the breath. And my first experience, I don't know, have you ever gone skiing?
No.
Okay, I could distinctly remember as if it were today.
Uh-huh.
I was 13 years old, high school trip to the slopes, and I was on the very flat almost run, and my friend said, yeah, come on, you can go up there, do this. And I had never been on skis. I swear to you, when the skis just started going down, I didn't realize I had stopped breathing, but I didn't breathe for the whole slope. I was going to die. And then I got to the end, and then I took a breath. That is the first time I can say fear and the stopping of breathing is linked.
Mm, mm.
And it has been that way forever.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, what is this? Why is it? And how can you continue breathing when that fear is very real?
It requires really conscious effort. And we're fighting against, you know, the vagus nerve that goes all through your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I consider the vagus nerve the most important thing in understanding what your body response is to the fear. And then the understanding that is one thing, and then saying, okay, become aware of your breathing. And obviously there's a whole bunch of exercises and, you know, yoga and all of that sort of thing. For me, it's saying to yourself, with help from a coach, be aware of your breathing. Take one moment. Take 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. Breathe in for three, hold it for three, out for three. And that takes the time of making the changes. Where someone says, I breathe all the time. Well, yeah, thank God. If you didn't, you'd be dead. But in terms of the allowing your mind to say this is a threat, means your mind is not on breathing deeply and breathing evenly and giving yourself a chance to have blood circulating through your body and giving yourself a chance to take a moment to think. And breathing is the most important.
I mean, I'm trying to relate it to that free fall on the slopes. If I had the gift from God to do that in that moment, I probably would have become a pro because I would have known what to do.
Yes,
but sometimes the line is not so direct
from
the novice to being a pro.
Exactly. But I, you know, to me, it's there isn't any other way. And if you want to look at it from a theatrical perspective, if you have stopped breathing, if you are shallow breathing, your voice is going to be affected. Because you're not positioning it correctly, your posture is going to be affected. All of those things. This, to me, breathing is, I'll say it as the engine room of the instrument you're using to deliver the piece, whatever it is. If you're not breathing and you're not, I don't want to say calming yourself down. That's not what we're doing. What we're talking about is mastering control of threat breath.
Yes, and it is linked to movement.
Yes.
Breathing is, you know, in my mind, movement is life. Without breath, you die quickly. And hence, you know, seeing death in right before me on the slopes.
Yes.
But you did say, yes, there are exercises and it doesn't happen, as I said, from the novice to the pro becoming. But what Can you give us, you know, a spoiler alert, a couple of ideas of how you can control your breathing mid-air when you're working,
yes,
when you're delivering mm-hmm. a speech?
Yes. Okay. It does require knowing. It does require self-awareness of where your breath is, obviously. And
yes.
It does require finding, there's a series of, you know, things that we can talk about. And I've actually got a card that I would love to send these to you, Claudia. This is my, can you see them? They're called.
Oh, look, ladies and gentlemen, you don't see her. I'm looking at a card she's holding in her hand.
Yes.
Top 10 tips for anxiety busting.
Yes.
But wait a minute. Before you go there,
yes,
I have been watching her and looking at her earrings, and they are like two cards. There's writing on those earrings. I can't for the life of me see what they say.
It
what
says.
So when she pulled up the card, I said, now I'll say it.
It says, be kind.
Oh,
it's a cutout. Both of them say be kind. Yes.
Okay, they're two different colors.
That's right. Yes.
Okay.
I have shoes like that
too.
So
the card. Oh. What about gloves? Come on.
No,
a scarf.
It's Brisbane. I don't wear gloves much.
That's right.
Semi-tropical.
Listen, so it's the semi that we're worried about. Okay,
so
you have these cards, and what do you use them for? Do you give them to clients? Do you
yes,
send them?
Yes, I send them to people if they, you know, and it's available on my website, but I'm not here to flog off my website or anything.
Okay, well, good. I'll write that under the episode.
Yes, uh-huh. These are available, and I give these to people. These are the top 10. I have another thing called 33 Ways to Disrupt the Fear Spiral. And to me.
Oh, why 33?
Oh, because it seemed, you know. 33 ways. I said 10's not enough. So how can we make this?
That's not
you know.
Good.
And okay. And for me, it does require just a moment. You take a moment to breathe. You take a moment to think about. And you would be aware, Claudia, the power of the sense of smell. What is the memory of a scent?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
All of those build into the top
10,
yes, top 10 and top 33, Madeline. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's a question of with breathing, there are ways, as we've said, to slow it down, to be consciously aware of where your breath is going in and out. Think about what it feels like coming in your nose and going out of your mouth. Take 1 second. To think about your breath, and you are interrupting the fear spiral, the anxiety, because
right,
you know as
right.
as you get into the fear spiral without any training, it gets worse and worse, and your body is responding. And for my techniques, it is stopping that spiral for a second or two so that it resets. I'm not saying uh-huh. to anybody you can get rid of your fear forever. What I'm saying is manage the fear, become aware of what it is. Manage your breathing, manage control of your breathing, and then we can start talking about how you can polish your performance.
Right. We can't get rid of our fear. I mean, that is what helps us.
That's right.
Really.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's not the intention. It's to channel mm-hmm. the positive things of what fear is about to be able to lift, activate.
I'm going to go off course here
yes.
because I can't do that. Behind you, there's a book there, and I'm
yes.
reading Australian Dictionary.
Yes.
There's an Australian Dictionary?
Yes, there is. Absolutely. And I've only just recently updated that, Claudia. It's
uh-huh.
the Macquarie Australian Dictionary. It is the place yeah. to go for Australian English. It's originally came out of the Macquarie University in New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend the Macquarie Australian Dictionary, uh-huh. if anybody wants to know about Australian English, and it is a form
yes.
of in its own, and that was mm-hmm. my birthday present to myself.
For yourself.
Yes.
Talk about the language then. People who come to you, and you mentioned Zoom, so I imagine you coach and counsel, you know, consult
yes.
with people who are far away.
Yes.
How far away? No, just so I can understand the language difference.
The majority of my clients have been Australian, for sure.
Okay.
Another client I had was in the Ukraine. Her okay. English was brilliant.
Perfect.
You yes, know, yeah. I have to admit, most of my clients, there was one excellent in Miami, English. You know, most the excellent English and in terms of in a corporate world, you know, the yes. corporate, you know, that's sort of the higher proportion of my clients. Right. I did run an academy, a children's drama academy for 18 glorious months. Yeah. And I had enormous mm-hmm. fun. Oh, where else can you get to float around like a bee and teach children yeah. about breathing well when yeah, they're speaking? Yeah. That was dream job. Yeah.
Because why I ask this yes. is that I'm wondering how much does the language portion come into it? And I'll yes. clarify this.
Sure, sure.
I host this podcast and I have several guests. And at times, some of the guests are almost impossible to understand. Mm. Not often.
Yeah.
But, and they're perfectly native English speakers, Native American speakers, or Native Australian speakers. Mm. But it is the way they deliver their speech, you know, grouping together words that sound like slogans. And it was almost impossible to understand. Mm. I, you know, and does this factor into what you do at all? Has it ever been the case?
I probably, to a certain extent, I suppose, in terms of as part of my programs, if it's only a short piece that the person is delivering, I will get them yeah. to deliver the speech to me and I'll film it mm-hmm. and then we work together uh-huh. and then I get yes. them to deliver it again so that we have a review and rehearsal, mm-hmm. you know. For me, that probably isn't a feature that jumps out mm-hmm. as much. For me, it is mm-hmm. the cadence of the, you know, the fluidity, you know, yeah. that's
right, and right. Saying, paralinguistics.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in terms of, do you really want that sentence to be so long? Are you right. losing, okay, you know, so it's,
that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what I meant.
Sure. Mm-hmm. The analysis of the content, I suppose, to me is mm-hmm. it has to be punch. Every single one has to be punch, 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 punch. And, you uh-huh, know, uh-huh. you're talking about Aunty Mary, and Aunty Mary was this to me. Don't say because da-da-da-da. Yes. Aunty Mary was this to me. She did it. So right. certainly the structure uh-huh. of, and not that I'm saying I'm expecting someone to read out the eulogy, but until we get to that point, right. people do need to have hearing the
right,
sound,
paper.
You know, yeah, yeah, written it yeah. down. Yep. Did that answer what you were talking about?
Right, so, oh yeah, perfectly, perfect. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, okay, good.
And you so eloquently responded.
Well, thank you.
All right, so you've mentioned a couple of times
yes.
The notion of performance.
Yes.
And speaking. So maybe you can, and I'm not sure if you group them together, where the line is drawn between speaking and performance. Is it all, is it the same like the chicken and the egg?
Yes.
A form and content?
Yes.
What is the difference?
I don't think, I mean, it is on a continuum, I suppose, but every yeah. time someone opens their mouth to deliver a piece of, yes. of language that has a person at the has a message that's to be delivered and going to someone at the other end, that is a performance yes. for me. Not
when
a performance on stage,
not
on stage, but a performance of a piece of work.
Okay, so wouldn't that be every case, or would you think that a spoken diary for your ears only would not be that? There, you know, because for me, a receiver.
Yes.
There's always a receiver if there's a writer, mm-hmm. unless the receiver doesn't, unless the writer does not intend at all to.
Understood.
Give that piece of writing to anyone.
That's because, an interesting
right,
point.
Right, we're audiobooks.
Yes.
All right. So we have audiobooks, and there are actors, and they do this. Most of them are actors, and they use their voice to move the narration.
Yes.
And audiobooks rely on good narrators because yes. if it's terrible, you know, they just get
turn it off. That's right.
But they work in solitude.
Mm.
They have their booth at home and they work.
Yes.
And they do their performance. So here it's difficult to know the difference. If you say performance, because it gives me the impression that you mean on stage or one to many, a performance where a eulogy could be a performance perhaps. Mm. I'm not sure.
Yes. I'm taking now a part of the program. There's 7 steps in the program. I'll take part.
Wait, which program? Come on, be nice. Tell us everything.
Okay.
What program?
It's the Polish Your Pitch program. It is the Polish Your Pitch program.
Okay, Polish Your Pitch.
Polish Your Pitch. Pee, pee, pee. And the pitch that I'm talking about is not a sales pitch.
Okay.
So we're talking about Polish Your Pitch, whatever that pitch is. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. the first stage is, who's your audience? Are they there?
Okay.
Have they paid to be there? What is their expectations? Step 2.
How much have they paid?
How much have they paid? Yes.
Yeah.
Step 2.
In terms of fear, if they paid a lot, you might get more nervous.
That's right. It's all. Step 2 is, what role are you playing in that presentation? Now, you mm-hmm. could be a report deliverer. You could be a fond niece. You could be the expert. Mm-hmm. I'll do a very quick anecdote. I listened to a chap who was mm-hmm. a pest controller, and he talked about this stick that he put into the ground with certain chemicals, and the termites or whatever it was would just be passionate for this chemical. And the way he delivered mm-hmm. this piece was fascinating, absolutely fascinating. So he was...
Give me that stick.
Yeah, give me that stick, you know? And he was, he presented himself as the expert. And you could be the expert rubber glove stretcher, you know?
Right, sure.
You know,
sure.
It's the role that you are playing within the context of that piece.
So in
and
this
that changes.
Case, what would his role be? If you were on the outside, you were looking and you were giving him an evaluation, what, according to you, in your language, would his role have been then?
The termite man?
Yeah.
He was an expert.
What was his role while he was doing that?
His role was delivering an expert's explanation.
Ah, okay.
His outcome would have been an explanation. But that outcome was so powerful because he was totally in control of his content and he was passionate about what he was doing.
Wait a minute now, Francis. Just take a second.
Yep.
We'll go back a minute, just a minute ago.
Yep.
And when you were explaining this man with the stick in the ground, he was so passionate. I said, I want it. You know, I mean, I was ready to buy it, you know?
Yes.
It was almost as if it were a sales pitch as well. And mm-hmm. so we see these genres. I mean, the genres, I'm calling them.
Yes.
But the roles may coincide sometimes.
Oh, they could.
They?
Absolutely. But for me, the important thing is being able to establish what your role is in the delivery at that point.
Yes.
You know,
and then you can always change. All right.
And taking that one step further to your example of the narrator, at that point, the role is to deliver the sound, a good, you know, vocal presentation, representation of the written word. That's their role.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a performance?
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Yes. Yes, when, I have no doubt about that.
When you are talking, and I was only good at this sometimes, when you are talking to your daughter who's gone lost in a major supermarket and come back, are you a screamingly anxious mother, or do you take a step back and say, darling, I was really, really frightened. I couldn't find you. What role am I playing? A grown-up mother as opposed to a fright. Is that the point that, you know, the point that I'm making is that in any delivery of speech and receipt of the, or, you know, the receiving end of that speech or piece of work or whatever you want to call it, it is a performance.
All right. So of course, the mother who was so calm has to be a performance.
Yes.
So now
your heart's beating.
Your heart's beating, flying out of your chest.
That's right.
What about when can you consider, is there a time or an occasion when you consider it just, in inverted commas, speaking rather than a performance?
Wow.
A documentary?
Yes, possibly.
A news report?
I have a little bit of a background in radio. Even a news report, uh-huh. the way that it's delivered, you need to be able to emphasize the correct point in each sentence. It's not just reading words.
Yes, of course.
You know?
And the movement, yeah, of mm-hmm. course.
And, you know, in Rome, blah, 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 in mm-hmm. Miami, and the way that you've presented it. So that requires preparation to be able to deliver. It is still a string of words that is contextually sound, I guess, but it is,
right,
you know,
right.
As a newsreader, you still have a role to play, which is to deliver the news in a way that will, you know, I hope, will encourage
understood.
To be understood and yeah. for people to listen to the sound cue of what is the important word in that sentence, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. So I'm trying, it's hard for me to establish when speaking is just speaking. No, I can't imagine.
No, trying to think and yeah. I haven't, even when you talk to your cat, you know, even when you talk to the
yeah.
cat.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So, you know, there is this speaking, performance speaking continuum.
Yes.
That maybe it's good, it's interesting for a person just coming and saying, okay, this, you're reading, this is just speaking, but then you need to perform, you know, the eye contact and all of that. If it's even behind a computer, I can see that.
Mm.
Wow. Isn't it fascinating?
Oh, I love it. Just love it.
I know. I had a sister who was a hairdresser, and one day she said to me, and I was always worried about what I had on, you know, and she said to me, well, all you have to do is cut your hair. That's what speaks to you most. And I said, well, yes, but surely the clothes you wear, but most important, when you open your mouth,
yes.
that's what really characterizes you. And so I'm thinking that everyone has their own idea. If you're you work with hats, you know, you think if you don't have a hat on, that's, you're nobody, you know?
Yes.
So, but we speakers believe that speech is the number one
yes.
Thing that is important and forever, because you don't even have to see a person,
no.
but the power of their voice yes. is immense.
Yes.
Immense.
Absolutely. And it is a legacy. It is a legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That the piece of the, I'm trying to put it into words because it is so important that on one side,
breathe,
leading people.
Start breathing.
Yes, I did. You noticed, didn't I? Did you notice that I breathed?
I did.
Yes.
I noticed. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For me, for a person to be able to step into their sense of what the truth is in their role, whatever that role is, in whatever circumstances right. we're talking about, where they can be absolutely confident that they are in their truth. And whether it's mm-hmm. talking to the cat or whether it's narrating or whatever, stepping in yeah, that yeah. circle of truth means that their voice is going to be the power, as you spoke about.
Yeah.
But to me, mm-hmm. it's also the purity of that power, the purity of that voice, the
yeah, yeah.
purity of the essence. Mm-hmm. I'm stumbling on words now, but to me it's the essence of a person when you can get them to a point where they're confident to say, I believe this. Yeah. And it doesn't mean to say that you're going to be leading activists or anything
right.
like that. It
right,
is day-to-day right, stuff, yet. You know, day-to-day yeah, stuff yeah. that says, I want to order that cup
expression.
Of coffee.
Yeah. yeah, or that drink.
That drink. Yes.
Years ago, there was an expression, the eyes are the soul.
The windows of the soul.
But, you know, I have to say it's the voice.
Oh, yes.
It's that essence you're talking about. Mm. I know when I hear. I mean, I've been doing this for 40 years and
yes.
my ears, I can't see. I can't see to save my life. But my ears are so attuned to sound
yes.
that I know when someone has slept. You know, even if they've had a sex night, you know, or what
yeah.
they ate and how yes. late at night they ate and how, you know, from the sound of their voice.
Mm.
And it's such a giveaway, you know, it's
yes.
such a giveaway. And for many years I've worked with the in undercover police work, in questioning and things like that, and where we only had the sound of their voice. And that was really challenging. But yes. It was, you know, so clear, black on white. Mm. It's so clear whether someone was telling the truth.
Yes.
Or not.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
Very, very easy.
Mm.
Gee, I wanted to talk a second about audiobooks. And if you know if Australia has its own culture for audiobook narrators, if they... if there is, because I know that there is a very powerful UK association of audiobook mm-hmm. narrators mm-hmm. and voiceover
yeah.
Professionals. But you know, it's like the French. The French like the French in the mouth of the French.
Yeah.
They don't want,
yes.
you know, outside.
Like. Yes.
So in Australia, I would imagine that Australian authors would choose naturally voiceover specialists
mm.
in Australian ones,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. That's my understanding.
Have you ever
yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever had the opportunity to work with anyone who was a voiceover professional?
No, or who, but I'd love
to. Have to do with, oh my God, it's fabulous. I mean, these people are able to voice over 20 different characters for a novel.
Oh, yes.
And you could swear while you were listening that there were at least 10 people in the room.
Yes.
And
yes.
You know, like going in and out
yes.
with nary a breath, I have to say. I listen for the breath changes and I can barely hear it. I don't know how they do it.
Mm, mm.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Oh, I would love to. I haven't. No. That's a gap. I'm
you
going
should
to write
try
that down.
It yourself.
I'm going to write it down.
No, you've got to try it yourself. You've got to try it yourself.
Yes.
Because it's fascinating. It's fascinating. Well, anyway, look, all things come to an end. I know. And I could go on and on and on and on, Frances. Thank you so much for coming. But give us in one sentence where people can find you. And of course, I will put it under the episode mm-hmm. Description.
Thank you. You can find me on... let's do the Facebook. Let's
breathe,
let's
breathe.
Breathe, yes. Find me by breathing first. My Facebook page is probably the most accessible because I've set the Facebook page up so that people can ask questions about speaking in public. And you don't try and put it into Google where you get 1,297,000.
Uh-huh. Right.
I've set it up so that if you ask a question, we'll try and tailor the answer that's the most practical for how you can get to the next stage.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So my Facebook yes. group is Polish Your Pitch. Simple
yes.
as that. Simple as that.
Yes.
And
I've got that. Facebook.com, Polish Your Pitch.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the website is francescarl.com.au, and that's where you can get your free set of 10 Fear Busters.
Yeah.
But if you want a courage companion.
She won't give us the earrings, but she'll give us the card.
That's right. for me, it's a courage companion that I want to be for you so that you learn some tools, some tricks, some techniques that you can use forever, whenever you need to speak in any circumstances.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I hope we'll have another time to the occasion to again speak here.
Oh, so do I.
Future.
Please.
Yeah. Yeah.
This isn't
bye-bye.
Long enough, Claudia.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon.
Bye, Frances. Now.